Only because of my gross.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our village board meeting. Would you stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Good evening and welcome to our meeting tonight. We'll call our meeting to order. Roll call, Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Genrich.
Here.
Trustee Atwood.
Here.
President Rafter here. Trustee Dart.
Here.
Trustee Green is excused. Trustee Sampson.
Here.
President McCown for... Do I have a motion to modify or adopt the agenda as presented?
Move to adopt as presented.
Thank you.
Second.
Second by Trustee Atwood. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Announcements. On Wednesday, June 26th, for the seniors in our community, there is a senior summer picnic at Green Isle Park. It's $17 per person for ages 55 and over. There is more information on our village website. Check in for the picnic is 4 p.m. Dinner is at 4:30 p.m. And we have dancing until 7 p.m. The title sponsor is Assisted Living by Hillcrest. Another announcement. This past week we had, for you dog lovers, we had a very successful Poochies and Pints pop-up dog park. We had, I'm guessing, 200-plus dogs. Some of them brought their owners. It was a great party, but well done to staff, and we had a lot of volunteers out there, so it was a great event. And if you missed it, there's another one on October 12th at Green Isle Park. Any other announcements from the board?
The Alloway Business Association is hosting a Braten Burger Fry at Webster Market on Friday from 11 to 2.
Thank you.
So encourage people to stop in for a Braten Burger and so on, whatever.
It's going to be a Webster Avenue Market. Come on by. And all that money goes to support the Alloway Business Association's initiative for, it's called the Junior Excellence Awards, and it's a scholarship program for kids in our area.
I've got one. Next Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. at Heritage Hill. Brown County Civic Music, the promoting organization, and Heritage Hill will be hosting Opera at the Hill, and $7 admission if you're not a member either of Civic Music or Heritage Hill. And we're bringing up four singers and a keyboardist from the Florentine Opera, and also two locals, a young woman by the name of Mary Arndt, and Scott Ramsey, who's really well known as probably one of the better opera singers this area has produced. And it's light opera, musical theater, and the American Songbook. And we did one last year, at the Botanical Garden and drew about 600 people. So we're hoping for good weather, although we'll go indoors in the Education Center there if it rains. But opera at the Hill.
And what was the date?
I'm sorry, next Sunday, the 23rd, I guess it would be.
At what time?
4 to 6 p.m.
Very good. Thank you.
And there's overflow parking at St. Matthew's.
Yes, thank you.
Any other announcements from the board? Any announcements from staff? Hearing none, we'll close the announcement section and move on to item number 4, public comment. Is there anyone in the audience this evening who would like to speak on something that is not on this evening's agenda?
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I'm the former co-chairman of the Village of Alloway Bike Ped Committee. I request that Mr. Rafter put on the next agenda discussion of the mistakes in the bonding and budget for the capital improvement projects that was approved last year, and West St. Joseph Street is currently under construction, and that was set for a resurfacing instead of a complete
rebuilding. Anything else you want to talk about?
I'd like you to put that on the agenda. We've discussed it, Brad.
If Brad thinks it should come, it'll come.
That's not acceptable.
Okay. And I said no last time. So, is there anything else you would like to talk about?
The reconstruction of West St. Joseph Street and why we're $700,000 over budget on a $200,000 project is of a concern to me.
Okay. Listen to the recording of your meeting with Brad and you'll have the answer. Thank you. Anything else you'd like to talk about?
That is what I'd like to talk about.
Thank you. Have a good night. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on something that's not on this evening's agenda? Hearing none, we'll close the public comment. Excuse me. We'll move on to item 5, public hearing to consider adoption of ordinance 2019-04, rezoning property located at 120 East Alloway Avenue from C, Professional Office and Residence District, to Commercial District. Is there anyone in the audience this evening that would like to speak on this topic? Second call. Last and final call. Hearing none, we will close our public hearing and move on to action item number 6, ordinance 2019-04, rezoning property located at 120 East Alloway Avenue from C, Professional Office and Residence District, to Commercial District. And this ordinance, if someone makes a motion to approve, it is based on, it is contingent upon the purchase of the property. Do I have a motion?
I'll move to approve this ordinance.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Any discussion?
There's really not a change in practice at that site. It's been kind of a combination commercial residential thus far, right?
Yep. Yep. This is the old Brian's Barbershop over on Alloway Avenue, and someone wants to purchase it to put a dog grooming parlor and a residence there.
So, a question. Maybe this has been raised. I think perhaps it has been that some people might object that dogs can be noisy. They bark a lot. I would assume that's already provided for under other ordinances. If there's a noise issue with a specific property, we have other ways to enforce that.
Maybe Mike would have a question on that, or a comment on that, but that question was asked of the potential property owner at the Planning Commission meeting, and she had indicated that it's only going to be a couple dogs at a time. It'll be by appointment, so it's not like they won't be boarding at that location.
Okay, no problem.
But I don't know if Monica or Mike, you want to add anything regarding noise?
Is that referenced up? I don't understand what you're
saying. No, regarding any potential noise complaints regarding dogs?
We handle them pretty much one case at a time. And if Monica doesn't get her to handle it, then if I get called during the day, she's good. And most people are like, oh, I normally make contact with the people with the dog and the other ones, and we'll try to work it somehow. But it's pretty much a one-on-one situation.
Okay. Yeah. I was just curious.
We have a noise ordinance specific to barking dogs.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion? We have a motion to approve, the rezoning and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 7, we will open a public hearing to consider conditional use request to allow for a residential and retail trade service mixed use in an existing building located at 120 East Alloway Avenue, the one we were just discussing. Is there anyone here who would like to speak on this topic? Second call. Last and final. We will close our public hearing and move on to agenda number 8, action regarding conditional use request to allow for residential and retail trade service mixed use in an existing building located at 120 East Alloway Avenue. Do I have a motion on this item?
I move to approve.
Trustee Dart.
Contingency.
Oh, it is also with the same contingency that the property is sold.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. I have a motion to accept, second by Trustee Harris. Any discussion?
Just that our ordinance doesn't allow for mixed use at this time, so that piece of property was already under a conditional use, and it's just continuing under a conditional use until the time we have mixed use.
Thank you. Any other discussion? We have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 9, public hearing to consider the adoption of Ordinance 2019-05, rezoning property located at 535 Green Avenue from village-owned property to commercial district. This is the former pump house, village-owned pump house on Green Avenue. Do I have a motion on this item? Or, I'm sorry, this is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak on this issue tonight? Second call. Last and final. Hearing none, we will close our public hearing. Move on to action item number 10, ordinance regarding Ordinance 2019-05, rezoning property located at 535 Green Avenue from village-owned properties to commercial district. Do I have a motion on this item? Trustee Dart.
I move to approve.
Thank you. Seconded by Trustee Genrich. Any discussion?
Again, it's consistent with the neighborhood there. We've got mixed residential and retail and all of that, so this would fit with that.
Yep. Any other discussion? We have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 11, public hearing to consider conditional use request to allow for a residential and retail trade service mixed use in an existing building located at 535 Green Avenue. Is there anyone in the audience this evening who would like to speak on this item? Second call, last and final. Hearing none, we will close our public hearing and move on to item number 12, action regarding conditional use request to allow for a residential and retail trade service mixed use in an existing building located at 535 Green Avenue. Do I have a motion on this item?
Move to approve.
Trustee Dart, seconded by Trustee Sampson. Any discussion?
Sort of the same thing as the last piece of property. We don't have a way to zone a mixed use at this time. And one other comment is it's really nice to see that building being taken care of. I think it'll be a really interesting use of the building.
Very good, I would agree. Any other discussion? We have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Item number 13, we'll open the public hearing to consider adoption of Ordinance 2019-06, PDD request to renovate the existing drive-through restaurant located at 1903 South Webster Avenue, also known as McDonald's.
Did you miss something?
I don't believe so. Is there anyone here who would like to speak on that motion or on that item? Second call. Last and final. We will close our public hearing and move on to item number 14, action regarding Ordinance 2019-06, PDD request to renovate the existing drive-through restaurant located at 1903 South Webster. Do I have a motion on this item?
Move to approve.
Trustee Harris, do I have a second?
Second.
Trustee Sampson. Any discussion?
Just one quick question.
Yes.
In Section 2C, is the typical amount of time we're allowing 5 years on items that we've done things like this in the past. It just seemed like a long amount of time.
Our ordinance reads 2 years.
Okay.
That's been our past practice. We did have 5 a while back, but we then changed it to 2. However, a piece of state legislation that was passed last year said that we could only, the minimum would be 5 years.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Good question. Mm-hmm. Any other discussion?
Better answer.
Any other discussion? We have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 15, action regarding noise variance permit request for a baptism at 1226 South Quincy Street on August 3rd from 3 to 11 p.m. And I understand that there is some change to our understanding of the application. Jason, would you like to fill us in?
I spoke with them today here. They understand the noise variance goes till 10 p.m., so 3 to 10 is their request. It's only going to be 2 people singing without microphones or anything and in the car. It's a baptism. They're inviting all the neighbors, next-door neighbors, everything like that. So the lady said she'll be on hand at that phone number if we have any issues, but
you think it's going to be is it an acoustic guitar or is it an electric guitar?
Oh, no, acoustic.
Okay. 12 string or 6?
Have we had a long history of raucous baptisms?
Well, they are taking reasonable measures. It says right here, volume down. Yeah. If there's a complaint, to reduce the impact.
Maybe it'll be louder.
Very good. I will accept the motion on this item.
Move to approve.
Move to approve by Trustee Atwood. Do I have a second? Trustee Harris. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Item number 16, action regarding ordinance 2019-07, amending sections of Code 151, animals in regards to dangerous dogs. We'd like to invite Monica, or do you guys want, who wants to kick it off? Okay.
So I don't know how we want to, there's several ordinances that are being, the main one is the dangerous dog one, but there's a couple ordinances that are being modified, mainly to make us, make the ordinances consistent with programs and with state law. So I don't know if you want to go in that direction, I guess.
Yeah, it's one ordinance, right? It's just different sections of the ordinance.
It's 151, but then it's separate. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
So the easiest one is section 158 or 151-8, animals suspected of biting people.
Yep.
I can draw your attention to that one. All that is changing, we have 14 to 10 days for the date of a bite. All that has to do with is the quarantine time. And state law requires a 10-day quarantine, as does Brown County Health Department. It's a 10-day quarantine. And so this is, you know, it's just an old ordinance that never got corrected. And so all that does is change 14 to 10 days, which is the quarantine that we do. Okay, so that's a pretty simple one. The other one, animals at large. Many of you were here when we implemented the trap, neuter, return program for feral cats, if you remember. I think it's working very well. It's not perfect, but it's better than what we did. I can point to neighborhoods where I used to get called every spring and summer to trap kittens and have 2-3 litters of kittens running around the streets and that, and those same neighborhoods, they still have a few cats, but they're sterilized, they're vaccinated, and there's not any more kittens running around. So I think that program is working very well, and every, you know, when I go to the National Animal Control Association, now supports TNR. Most of the workshops last year were all about TNR. HSUS, which is Humane Society of the United States, the Association for the Prevention of Cruelty, they all support TNR as the best way to handle feral cat, which is wild cats, non-adoptable cats, you know, cats that are unsocialized. So basically, 151-2 animals at large, it just adds a line saying that except for a cat that's not socialized, but it's in a qualified TNR program, will be exempt. So we don't, people don't, you know, feel like the police or anybody has to go and be trapping those cats. They have tipped ears, so we know who they are. Cats, I mean. Right?
So tipped ear, you mean clipped?
Yep, a little tip off their ear when they have their surgery, yeah. The other ordinance that I recommend changing is 51-11, which is the keeping of animals. I looked at this, and, you know, our old ordinance talks about two cats and two dogs, and no more than a combination of four, I believe it was. What I changed it to was, okay, that they could have, no person can shall own or keep in their possession more than six cats that are sterilized, and I added that are sterilized, and two dogs in any lot zone residential. And then we changed for a period of time not exceeding 5 months of age from birth, which means that if someone does want to have a litter, they don't have to get rid of the puppies by 8 weeks, because that's really not appropriate. I mean, by five months is when they need their rabies, and when most vets would say they're mature enough to start having puppies or kittens. So by that time, then, they should be either licensed with us or in their new homes. But 8 weeks actually is way too early. Most of the veterinarians, you shouldn't even be giving your puppies or selling your puppies or kittens between 8 and 12 weeks is the recommended age. So that's where that 5 months came from, because that's the license age and the rabies age. So then we changed, instead of taking in no event shall any person have more than four animals, I just changed to the allowed number of animals. And basically what this allows for is that if people are into cats and they want to have a few more, as long as they're sterilized, I just think that's reasonable. Anybody that has cats, I have one dog and several cats, and believe me, one dog is more work than three or four cats, in my opinion, because in terms of exercise and all that good stuff. So that's where that came from. And then in that same ordinance, I added again, except that a cat that's in our TNR program and is not socialized and is in our TNR program, they would be exempt from this ordinance. So that's the three that are kind of easy, I think. They just kind of reflect what we've already got in place in terms of animal control programming. Yes?
Just the number with six cats, is that consistent with other municipalities?
Yes. In terms of several communities, Howard Swamigo have no limit on cats, actually. But, for example, Swamigo has no limit on cats. Howard has no limit on cats, but cats are licensed in Howard. So if they're not sterilized, it's $30 per license. So it's kind of self-limiting. Mm-hmm. And if you want to have, as long as they're all sterilized, you know. I also have the town of Pittsfield, which has no limit on cats.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Do you happen to know what Green Bay does? Or
Green Bay, I think, has, I don't know what their limit is, but I think they indicate a set number. It might be our current ordinance, because I think when I look at ordinances, some of our ordinances reflect Green Bay, because I believe for a while Green Bay used to cover us. I don't know for sure, but I know they used to cover us, but I don't know if our ordinances were taken directly. But some reflect, seem to have Green Bay influence. But I think, you know, for me, the key with cats and with any animal, actually, but especially with cats, it's not so much the number, it's whether or not they're sterilized. That's the big thing. You can have a lot of animals, and if they're all sterilized, it doesn't seem to become a problem, because it's just plus it indicates a certain responsibility. Any situation where I've gone to, like, you know, what you would call hoarding situations, and that, believe me, the animals are not sterilized and they're breeding, and that's why they become unmanageable and they become the disaster that you see on television and stuff. So.
Any questions for Monica?
So that's those three sections. Then, so the last one that's probably the biggest amount of changes in 151 is 151-9, the dangerous dog. The two major changes is in the first, how we define a dangerous dog, In the past, if a dog had to be off of its owner's property in order for any of the attacking or biting to even be an issue. And I really think that reflects back in the day in an agricultural community when if a dog was on its own land, there was more of a king, my kingdom, like whatever, you could probably fire a gun over people's head too if they were on your property. Well, that's kind of not appropriate now. Plus, I think that there are situations where dogs, even on their own property, if a dog is biting or attacking people, that's not okay. So, number one, I changed it, that it took that section out if without provocation. It chases or confronts or approaches a person in a menacing fashion. Then the second line, I did put for when unprovoked or while off its owner's property. I left that one in place, approaches a domestic animal in a menacing fashion. So basically that kind of does give a dog, usually it's a dog, but that kind of gives a dog some leeway if another dog comes on their property. Because a dog is different than dog-human. So if another domestic animal comes in a dog's yard, it's not going to be designated dangerous if it gets into a fight in that situation or attacks, just because that's just dog behavior. But if it attacks every human being that comes in its yard, that's probably a dangerous dog. Because let's face it, it could be Girl Scout, Boy Scout selling Christmas popcorn. If you have a dog that is going to go after somebody just because they come on your land, you probably need to take the special precautions that we have, that I proposed further down into the ordinance. And then we just added a kind of a catch-all at the bottom, number four, attacks a human being or other domestic animal without provocation. Okay. So that kind of changed the definition. And then the second big change is, right now our ordinance, if a dog is designated dangerous, they either have to get rid of it, they can't keep it in the village alleyway, or it can't be designated dangerous. And I just really think that there are situations where a dog might qualify as dangerous or potentially dangerous, but it's a family pet and it's fine in its own home with its own people. And if someone's willing to take the extra precautions, they might want to keep that pet. And so what I added in is if an owner wants to keep a dog that I have the leeway to designate a dog dangerous because it might be not a good fit with, it might be dangerous on the street or with people, other people, but within its own family, it's safe and the people are willing to take these precautions, then it would no longer pose a threat to the public or to the other to members of the community if they took these precautions. And I think that, it's reasonable, I think, if they're willing to do these things. And I don't know, basically what it is if the dog goes off their property, if they want to take it for a walk, it wears a leash and muzzle. If it's outside by itself, it's in a kennel that is escape proof and has a lock on it, so a kid can come up and open the door and, can't climb out, can't go under. If it's indoors, you just can't, have a flimsy screen door. It can't just be behind a screen door. It's not behind an electronic fence. It's a secured confinement. They wouldn't be allowed to keep a dog designated dangerous. They wouldn't be able to keep it in a multiple dwelling, like a apartment complex. You'd have to have your own private home to keep it. And then signs, there's signs, and then there's also insurance requirements. So, and then the procedure for declaring the dog dangerous would stay the same. It's investigated by the humane officer, and then there's also there's an appeal process if they disagree with my designation. That's all the same right now.
And you're confident with the changes? I only recall one incident over on Hoffman Road where somebody's dog got out and attacked a
The other thing this ordinance does is the only way right now for people to be able to keep the dog is to appeal my designation, and then it puts the board in the position of, okay, people are willing to do all these things, but our ordinance doesn't allow for that. And I think the last time, then the board really, as a board, we ended up kind of creating special circumstances, and this way it's in place already. And several communities have this, and I think it works good because it it's not either, you know, it's not one extreme or the other, you know, because there are a lot of dogs that, you know, probably need these extra precautions. I think a lot of people think of vicious dog and it's running around attacking everything that moves, and that's not the case. Aggression is very specific. Some dogs are great with people, but they just can't stand other dogs, and I think that it would be appropriate, you know, if people are willing to take these precautions with that dog, and a lot of them are, they understand that their dog, you know, needs these special things, and in special situations, it's not going to be able to handle it. It, you know, I think it's good for us to be able to provide that avenue. So,
Monica, a little earlier you said that if a dog attacks a dog who comes onto his or her property, that's not necessarily considered a menace, right? A dangerous dog.
Right. So it gives some leeway. It would still be investigated, to be quite honest. But you know, it does. It didn't get taken off on that number two, just because it wouldn't be considered kind of an automatic. It's kind of more appropriate for a dog when another dog comes on their property for a dog to show aggression.
So is that considered? I'm looking at number 15194,
right,
when it says attacks a human being or another domestic animal without provocation. So if I have a dog and it goes onto someone else's property and that dog attacks my dog, is that considered provocation by my dog going onto his property?
Right, it probably would. Yeah.
Okay.
That would be considered provocation. And that's kind of why that kind of makes that consistent. Having said that, there's still some leeway there in terms of, you know, if you have a, you know, if you have a dog that's, you know, being very submissive and, you know, goes in another animal's yard and this dog is, you know, just attacks anything that moves, we might, you know, we still might be able to look at that, or I might still look at that and say, you know, I think your dog is dangerous because that dog, yeah, it came into your property, but it was being real passive, real submissive. You know, then you're kind of getting into the details of what I do when I look at situations like that.
Mm-hmm. Just to add to that, may I?
Can absolutely.
What if you included language like excluding a leashed dog? Yeah, because the way it's currently written, you're I'm walking down the street with my dog who's leashed,
mm-hmm.
6-foot leash,
mm-hmm.
walks into somebody's yard, dog comes out, gets him, it's my fault. Well, I'm not expected to walk down the middle of the street, am I? Or what if I'm on the sidewalk walking my dog and an aggressive dog comes out of that yard?
Well, you're not in their yard if you're on the sidewalk.
I just because I've been a victim of it,
yeah.
Not once but twice,
right.
And the dogs are out there and they don't know they're protecting their territory,
right.
You know, I get it. And those houses that I've encountered, I don't walk by those houses anymore.
Did it come out on the sidewalk or mm-hmm. did it?
Two cases.
It came into the sidewalk.
Yeah, one in the road and one in the sidewalk.
The sidewalk, because it's public. I don't mm-hmm. consider that their yard.
Yeah,
that's public.
We understand that here, yeah. But in the event of a.
Well, I'm just saying by this ordinance, it'd be off its owner's property if it came into the sidewalk.
Okay.
So it wouldn't be related at all. You know,
one into the right of way where there isn't a sidewalk.
It's off its owner's property. What's that?
The formal right-of-way on almost every street, I think, even when there's
right.
not sidewalks, goes
right.
3 or 5 or 10
right.
feet
yeah,
up.
Yeah, any dog that runs out into the right-of-way onto the sidewalk, they're off their owner's property. And all of these are just guidelines anyway, to be quite honest. I mean, it's to give some guidelines of, you know, so people understand what we're looking at in terms of what dangerous, you know, is, so that people understand that if your dog's running out and being aggressive towards people, you know, passing by, and even dogs, and I try to educate people about this, even dogs that are behind a fence going nuts and barking, that's not a good thing. Okay, just because it's on your property doesn't mean you want your dog being aggressive and you know, but legally there's not, you know, and we're not at the point where legally we're going to try to prevent that because there's such a gray area there.
Okay. I would like to see a definition of provocation, though. Just.
Well, okay. Provoked is down below here, I guess.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. So any attack. So basically, if there's teasing, like that,
okay.
It kind of has to define provoked down below there, I believe. So if somebody breaking in your house, that's provoked. If somebody's, you know, again, it's up to me to kind of look at that, you know, if an animal is provoked or not.
Okay.
So yeah, there's a number of things down there. The person, it kind of talks about people mainly. So if the person who was attacked was teasing the dog, you know, poking at it, whatever.
Throwing firecrackers at it.
Right.
Okay.
The animal's protecting the person itself. I mean, a lot of this is used for education. You know, you have, you know, dogs biting kids and stuff because kids are fighting and wrestling and stuff like that. And animals don't always understand. It gets them all worked up and they end up biting somebody or you know, and it's, you know, it's like, they, you know, that could fall under that a little bit. The thing to keep in mind, though, is, you know, even if a dog is somewhat provoked, you got to look at how it is the I always look at provocation as, okay, because every dog has a reason for biting. Dogs are, you can make the statement that when a dog bites, it's been provoked. They don't bite for no reason. The point is, was it provoked in a way that's not acceptable in our community, or was it provoked in a way that, you know what, someone walking by on the sidewalk, that's going to happen every day. If your dog is provoked by that, you got to get some training or you got to do something about it. So, I mean, no matter what happens, I mean, the mailman provokes the dog. Every time they come deliver mail, they're provoking the dog. They're not doing it on purpose, but they're provoking your dog because when the dog barks and the mailman leaves, that's why so many delivery people get bit because every time they deliver a package, they're provoking the dog. But we have people delivering packages. So if your dog gets that worked up and is provoked by that, you need to kind of, you know, work it out. Either not let them see that or get with a trainer to do some behavior modification, you know. Every time the mailman comes, they get a treat. So pretty soon they love the mailman because they're getting chicken every time the mailman comes. That sort of thing. So,
okay.
So.
Any questions for?
Yeah, and I apologize if this was addressed before.
No, it's
good information.
No,
thank you. But, it's about the fourth page in the standalone 151.2, Animals at Large. And no person shall permit any of the following to run at large within the village. Any dog or cat.
Right.
Does that mean my neighbor is subject to an ordinance if I complain that his, you know, belled and tagged cat is bothering our bird feeder?
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's why I put except the cat that is not socialized. So if it's wearing a collar and a bell, it's socialized. That's an indoor cat. That's a cat you can pick up and take to the vet. That cat belongs to somebody. That cat, you know, they would not be exempt.
Okay.
They're not being, you
know. For the trap, neuter, and release, mm-hmm. You turn it over to some kind of local cat shelter that has donors who do that?
No, it stays in our community. It's a cat that's already living here. I just make sure it's sterilized and vaccinated.
Okay, is this a feral cat?
Yeah, you can't usually touch them. Yeah, that's why I have to trap them.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the village of Alloway is paying money to trap, neuter, and then release the cats who are violating the ordinance for house cats.
Well, cats don't violate ordinances, but yeah. I mean, because they're not owned by anybody. The alternative is, you know,
I get,
and that's a whole discussion of the TNR program, but it's we pay $88.50 for every stray animal that goes to the shelter. The TNR program is at $50 per cat. Okay. If in the past, we didn't do anything for these cats. We didn't do anything with them. They were just running around having kittens.
And so. I tend to know more bird lovers and DNR type people. And, you know, 10, 15 years ago, TNR was really a question. I guess now the politics have changed that it seems like everybody does that. Even though cats are an invasive species, they kill more, you know, songbirds than.
Right.
Than
so, no, but I'm not arguing that, but the science of it shows that, okay, it's not. The problem is a lot of people think, well, if we don't do TNR, we don't have any feral cats. That's not the two choices that I've had experience with. The choice is, do we have cats that aren't sterilized and vaccinated, or do we do TNR and we have cats that are sterilized and vaccinated, and their numbers go down?
Yeah.
Because and I get it, they kill birds, they're invasive species, but before, when we did nothing, they were all over the place.
Yeah.
So it's not about whether or not cats... If I had a magic wand so that every feral cat was tame, or they were all scooped up and they were gone, I would do that, but I can't.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at what works best to have the least amount possible and in the safest way possible and the healthiest way possible for the cats. Because before, when you did nothing, you had sick cats running around, you had kittens that were sick, you had people... And people, again, any program when it comes to animals is people have to cooperate with it. And people will not support a program that is lethal. And if all you do is trap feral cats and try to trap your way, you know, trap them and take them to the shelter or whatever, people won't support that. And we don't have time, you know, we don't do it anyway. You know, the TNR program works because people are willing to do it on their own. I mean, I don't go out, every cat in Alloway that's in the TNR program is not trapped by me. So if there's citizens out there that are willing to do that and go to a group like Cats Anonymous, Cats Anonymous is having a spay day this Saturday. They're gonna sterilize 80 cats with volunteer veterinarians and volunteer people. Believe me, there's no way you could get a veterinarian to volunteer to euthanize 80 cats on Saturday. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
So I get it. It's not a perfect program. In an ideal world, we wouldn't have any feral cats or any domestic animals that weren't taken care of properly by their owners and stuff.
Or children.
Or children, exactly. But it's not a perfect world. And, you know, I find, you know, I've been doing this 28 years. So I've seen, when I first started, we were doing it the other way. We were just trapping cats. We weren't doing, there's no TNR or any of that. And it was just like spinning your wheels. Because every year I'd go back to the same neighborhood and there'd be some feral cats there. And they'd be popping all kittens. And somebody was feeding them, but they wouldn't call me. They wouldn't tell me because they knew that I was just going to take them in. They'd probably have to be put down. The shelter tries to find them a barn cat home, but there's only so many barn cat homes out there, right?
And a word for feral cats, actually when the DNR really pushed this issue 15 years ago,
right.
there was pretty good science
that
showed that it wasn't the barn cats that were decimating songbirds.
Mm-hmm.
It was the subsidized cats. A barn cat has to go for the easiest source of food,
right.
And that's probably going to be rodents. They're not going to spend all day maybe chasing birds and maybe get one.
Right.
It's the cats that are subsidized and maybe do that for fun or find a nest in the backyard.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm happy that our ordinance does encourage people to keep their cats indoors.
Right.
And that the wild cat thing is a tough thing to, and you're doing the best you can.
I think, like I said, the program isn't perfect, but it's very good. And I haven't found a perfect one yet. I guess if we had giant cat sanctuaries everywhere that people would be willing to bring them in there, but we're not going
to
do that.
I'm looking at
what keeps the numbers the lowest, because that's the best thing for the birds. The fewer cats that are out there hunting birds, the better. So whatever program keeps the numbers the lowest, that's what I'm up for, and the healthiest for the cats, and that people will support. And right now, TNR, I don't know, maybe 20 years from now, something else will come up. But
Monica, do you have any numbers on Cats Anonymous and how many cats they've spayed in the last X 20 years?
Not off the top of my head, but tens of thousands.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The numbers have to be going down.
Yeah.
It's just an excellent program, and it's an excellent solution to the problem, and I thank you for working with them.
Well, thank you. I'll pass it on to Cats Anonymous. And the shelter as well does TNR. And there are several vets that actually I call up and they fit in TNR cats. And
okay.
So let's it is cheaper. We just save money for every cat that I do this
with. You have a question?
Just a closing comment, or not closing comment, just a comment. The feral cat program's working. I don't think we have to beat that to death. So,
okay.
And it's not in question.
It's not in question tonight. But I do want to circle back about the dog, from a dog that goes onto its property. I would like to see something put in there about leashed. This was brought up a year and a half ago or something when I approached the board on it to tighten up those restrictions a little bit. And I think that loosens it a little bit in terms of if an individual is out walking their dog,
right.
on the street,
right,
because there is no sidewalk, and the dog goes up into somebody's yard,
right,
and is attacked by a loose dog,
right,
because that dog's protecting his property. I think that dog still...
Actually, this gives me more leeway, because the old ordinance, actually, the changes that I proposed here actually does more to protect that dog on a leash, because if he goes up on someone else's property. Because the old ordinance, like I say, the dog that was attacking, the aggressive dog, had to be off its owner's property. So now, even if he's in his yard, he doesn't automatically get to attack everything that comes in.
Okay, that's...
I'm just saying, I look at that as a factor, as
perfect.
Maybe problem, but this actually gives more protection to an animal that might wander into another animal's yard and, you know, get attacked.
Got
because
it.
Before, as long as the dog was, you know, even with people, we had several where, you know, we had children that were bit in another person's home by their dog, and I looked at, you know, the dog was in his own home. I really couldn't use that as, you know.
Sure. Do you think this
factor.
Gives you more control? Then I'm all in.
Yes, because I got four, and then I added the fourth one as a catch-all that, you know, again, if your dog, if one dog's on a leash, and it's under control of its owner and happens to wander up, if another dog comes charging out, that's not just going to be a freebie, you know. Depending
good.
On what happens.
That's
obviously.
What I wanted to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
And I think six cats are too many. I had to work that in there.
Not to sterilize.
We'll get there. Thank you, Monica.
Okay. Good.
Okay, we have. Do I have a motion on this item? Trustee Genrich.
Move to approve.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Trustee Dart. Brad.
Before you think about it, I did send this to our attorney for another. I don't think you could get the cat, but. To review it to make sure that he is comfortable with it. There's under insurance, under the insurance it talks about the police chief. I just don't see the police chief. Or in this case, it would be the sheriff to be involved in this, so it would be a DEO or Brown County representative. So there's just a few.
And Randy hasn't looked at it yet?
He hasn't had a chance.
Okay. Okay, well then.
I would just ask you to not vote on it tonight, and I don't know if Mike has any other questions concerning.
Yeah, I have a few and comments on it, if you don't mind. I'll start from the first part, knowing that I get a lot of these calls, a lot of different things. I looked at the six cat ordinance you wanted, and reading through it, they used a minimum sized dog. It said that six cats are about the size of a minimum sized dog. Well, if we start doing that, how many people with small dogs are going to say, I want six small dogs because it's the size of a medium cat dog? Well, secondly, we really, since they won't let us license them, we don't have any control. If these have to be sterilized, who's going to prove it? Because we have no permit. They don't have to bring it in. They have six cats. Unless we get a call inside and we find the cat woman in there with 40 cats, and all of a sudden, oh yeah, none of them are sterilized. In fact, that we've kept it down to a number that people can see, people, neighbors, everything else know about, and we kept it clean. I guess I just feel that six cat limit is outside the normal for a village or a town on that. Secondly, on that, the other one, the final one we were just speaking of, again, that's another one that I guess I just feel that we're stepping over bounds by taking away the owner's and the dog's property. You have your property, you have the right to protect it. State law says we have the right to protect it. Now you're saying, I can come on your lawn with my dog, but my dog can't protect it. You know, if you're walking your dog, and walk your dog where you're supposed to be. If it's on the sidewalk and it's permissible because it's right away, then that dog should be taught not to get as far. But still, if you're going to allow your dog on my property without my permission for any reason because he wants to walk on the grass, myself and my dog should have the right to protect our property. And that's the way the dog also feels when it's around his home. He's going to protect his home. He's going to protect his family. And all of a sudden now we're just like, well, everybody else has their rights except the owner and the dog. We're the ones, again, that are having their rights away because somebody wants their dog, walk their dog on my land. You know, 90% of people are pretty good at walking their dogs and cleaning up after them. There's 10% that walk on my land and not clean up. So, you know, I don't want other dogs on my property. I keep my dogs off other people's property and I expect the same on mine. So I think that's something that should very well be considered when you're talking about.
One question there when you're talking about that. Are you talking about the right of way too and the sidewalk too?
That is something that would have to be addressed because the village has a right of way.
Correct.
Even if it's not a sidewalk.
Correct.
Okay. We never enforced it when there wasn't a sidewalk to the point of people walking on it, you know. I've never received any complaints about, you know, people walking on my grass, because most people don't be walking on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to come up with something where the dog has a right for the length of the right-of-way, I guess we could, because the village has that right. But just because the dog comes on the other side of the right-of-way, that's still my property. So we come up with the right-of-way, 10 feet, 8 feet from the curb?
10 feet from the curb.
Yeah.
I guess in that situation, though, I don't think this ordinance was stating that the dog. Yeah, I don't think it's doing that.
It's stated right there, taking out a property's order. If a dog comes on my land without my permission, invites a dog to enter my land, you're saying that's my dog's fault.
No, I don't think that's what she's saying or what the ordinance is saying. No, well, it says unprovoked, doesn't it?
Yes.
Mike, what section?
No, unprovoked or anything else. If a dog is approaches them, you know, in a menacing fashion, which is another question, what's a menacing fashion? Just because a dog barks, is it menacing?
That would be up to Monica and you to investigate.
And the court investigates. So, I just think of some things that need to be examined very carefully before we decide what steps you're going to do on it.
Are there any other issues you have with it?
With the ordinance itself, one of my main issues, yes, is the dangerous dog. I'm thinking that we're putting ourselves in, if you stop and you look at what's going on around the country, around everything else. We've taken the time to study, examine, decide that we have a dangerous dog in our village. Somebody has bitten somebody, some, you know, attacked animals is something that we feel very concerned about. Okay, now we're just going to give them another chance, but I'd like to stay in the village if they take some other options. If that's the way they want to do it, and I think you have to look back at, if somebody asks for a waiver, they have three dogs in my house, I have to get permission from my neighbors to do it. If we're going to go as deep in as allowing a known dangerous dog, I want to know that in my neighborhood. Okay? I want to be fair, because just because you say you can't leave your windows open when you leave, and you forget to leave a window open, and that dog goes out that screen, you just now, you violate us, so we're not going to do it. Great. Tell the boy that's going into surgery right now to have stitches on his face because he went to the dog that we know is dangerous, that we said was dangerous, and we turn around and allow it to stay in our village, even though it is dangerous, is my problem.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Question. We're talking about dangerous dog or dogs running off of their property. We have an ordinance that says they have to be contained in a fenced area, right? We can't allow our dogs to run free in our front yards. Is that correct, Monica?
Running at large is defined as an animal being off its owner's property.
I thought we have an ordinance on the books that says they have to be either chained up or in a secured fenced yard.
No.
Well, I'll tell you what.
It's defined as anything if they're off, if they're running off their property.
That's in tonight's thing.
But right. We have.
Well, to Brad's point, I think this needs a little more work, and I think we're trying to tackle several different issues in one motion. I think we should send it back for legal review. And
just real quick, I think what you're thinking of is we did add several years ago that if you have a dog that is aggressive, you cannot, if you have a dog that is aggressive or threatens people on the street, then you have to have it behind a solid fence. Because we had dogs that were like charging the electronic fencing, yeah, and slamming on the brakes, and it was only a matter of time before they were going to bust through that because they're aggressive and so we added that to our, containing of animals. So. It's under dogs and cats in parks or off the premises of the owner. Maybe that's what you're thinking of?
Yep.
If they were aggressive, they couldn't be loose in the front yard. They had to be behind a solid fence if they were aggressive or threatened people on the public railway.
So that covers some.
So we added that in that, yeah.
Okay. I would suggest we send this back to staff for a further review and thought and looking at. Everyone has, and of course, when you talk about animals, you're always talking about emotional things. So, but we try to do what's best for the community.
Jim?
So, yes?
When you talk about sending it back to review, is Randy Gass going to look at it anyways right away? Or is he going to wait until we have another version to look at?
Well, I'll follow back up with him with some of the comments that were made tonight, just to trigger some different thought process for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's taking what it is now, and we'll offer his opinion, plus or else I give him.
Okay, I have one question for him, and I don't know how to frame it, but my general awareness of dog law has been you get one free bite. You know, the dog establishes itself as a dangerous dog. Okay, you're shaking your head.
There's no such thing as a free bite in terms of what?
Not depends on the circumstances.
Not designated, yeah, dangerous, you mean?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Did he have a dog that's otherwise... In a civil courtroom. In a civil courtroom.
I don't believe...
No?
I don't know. That'd be a lawyer's question.
Okay, we don't want to debate things.
But civil... In civil cases involving this kind of damage, does it make any difference? How much difference does it make that the village of Alloway told the owner that, well, they can do this or they need to do that? Does that really make a difference, or is this thing best left in the civil arena beyond us setting some general guidelines? So, I'm wondering. Okay. Thanks.
Trustee Gemmick.
I would be willing to either withdraw or amend my motion to table further review and bring it back at a future meeting.
We'll take the motion to table.
And I will change my motion and second.
To second that. Any discussion on that? We have a motion to table and a second. All those in favor signify, excuse me, by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 17, regarding the Public Works Committee minutes from June 12, 2019. 17A, Riverside Drive crosswalk at 172. Mr. Gene.
I have been in discussions with the DOT on whether or not they would accept a 24-inch ladder pattern type crosswalk marking. I had asked that they provide additional information. They had indicated earlier that we would not be allowed to use the ladder pattern type. And I pointed out to them that the city of Kapir currently uses the ladder type pattern to the south of the village. That we feel that if provided, it will be a safer crossing, definitely be more visible, with the hopes that motorists would stop in advance of the crosswalk. Unfortunately, they have indicated no again. I'd asked Rod Hamilton, the traffic engineer, to go out to the site, and he agreed to do that. We drove Riverside Drive from village limits north to Green Bay, and we looked at the Hawk Crossing, we looked at the crosswalk at 172, and we looked at the Marine Street Crossing. And for consistency purposes, based on the conditions that we have on Riverside Drive, the transverse markings are the only crosswalk markings that they will allow. He pointed out that at the Hawk Crossing that there are multiple devices to get motorists to comply with that crossing. There's a stop bar, there's advanced pedestrian crossing signage, there's a hawk, so that they wouldn't allow the ladder pattern into that location. At 172, it's a controlled intersection with signals, stop bar, signage, and they feel that the current marking is appropriate. Much the same at the Marine Street crossing. We have a flashing beacon there. We have advanced signage, and they feel that the transverse lines are acceptable. But he did point out that if we want to improve the safety at the Marine Street crossing, that he would be open to in the street pedestrian crossing signs, and I think that is a good idea. And
in the street,
and crossing signs,
right on the center line.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. He pointed out some other little things that we could do at each crossing, mainly trim bushes back. To improve visibility. The next step here is to go out. Public Works will go out, or we'll hire a contractor to go out and remark the crosswalks, okay, and stop bars. And Public Works Committee members feel that that we should implement in-street sign at Marine. I'll go ahead and prepare a letter to the DOT in the hopes that they would allow us to place this at that crossing. The cost of that is fairly really inexpensive, $300 a sign.
Okay. So would you like a motion on that? Or do you need a motion on that? You don't need a motion to spend $300?
No.
Okay.
Thanks for all your work on that.
Yes, thank you. And ultimately, we're trying to keep people from entering that crosswalk. That's where this whole thing started, right?
And one of the other directions from the Public Works was to see what we come up with, number of stops for speeding in that location, and Jason's been working on that, so it'll just take a little bit of time.
Okay, great. Thank you. Matthew?
I'm a little disappointed in their response. I won't say decision. Some of the things that I've looked at is this look, the information that I've been able to find on the DOT website is that it's guidance about what should be done. It doesn't have to be done. The other thing, in terms of the emails that you included in our packet, part of the rationale for no ladder pattern was that there's too much paint and it could be slippery. If it's happening at a intersection where traffic would be stopped. Nobody's going to be sliding. I don't know how many different intersections throughout the state have colored, painted cobblestones, which those are nothing but slippery if they're using that rationale. I'm not comfortable with the logic they're using.
Well, the ladder pattern type, it does get slippery. I've heard of that before, but hopefully a motorist would stop in advance. But it's not only slippery to one driving a vehicle, but when you're walking across, it can become slick. And pedestrians or a biker could slip, fall. I know that is a concern, a valid concern of theirs. I have seen color stamped concrete, but that typically has a texture, so it doesn't get slick. But the paint does get slick, and the amount that we would place for ladder pattern type.
Although it is an approved crosswalk by the state.
It is. It is at mid-block crossings and roundabouts.
That's still not comfortable with it. Mid-block class crossing, hot crossing mid-block. It just doesn't. It doesn't make sense to me.
I brought that up, and you're right that it's a mid-block crossing, but it is a controlled crossing with the hawk.
I'm not trying to argue with you at what they're saying.
No, I know. I brought up your same question. I'm like, this is a mid-block, and the response I got was it's a controlled crossing.
Thank you. So, do I have a motion at all on this? Does anyone want to make a motion on anything?
Do we need to?
We don't, unless you want to. That's what you're doing.
We'll go ahead with the direction for no signs at the Marine Street and go with that.
Sure.
Or whatever, if you need to trim, I know we already talked about it and you already did it, but anything you can do to make it more safe and
okay.
People could do, let's do it.
Okay, 17B, intermunicipal agreement for the sharing of equipment and services.
The Northeast Wisconsin Director of Public Works, Public Works Directors have put together an intermunicipal agreement to share equipment. Understanding that they've been working on this for some time. The village attorney has reviewed it. It is acceptable to Attorney Gast. We, on a regular basis, share equipment with other communities. Last fall, we borrowed a skid steer from the city of Green Bay. And we borrowed that equipment for about a week and a half to appear on occasion, uses our back truck when their back truck is broken down, and vice versa. So we, on a regular basis, we do share equipment. And we all thought it'd be best to have an agreement in place that everybody signs to cover responsibilities and to protect each other. And been completed, and I would recommend that you make a motion to approve this agreement.
Thank you. Do I have a motion on the second?
Move to approve.
Trustee Atwood, do I have a second? Trustee Dart, any discussion?
Good idea.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. 17C, WDOT, Surface Transportation Block Grant Application for the Libel Street.
We're currently working on a Surface Transportation Block Grant for the reconstruction and rehabilitation of Libel Street. End of April, early May, we were informed that there were funds available, federal surface transportation block grant funds available for a couple of projects. Brown County's transportation subcommittee met and they had voted to allocate the funds to two projects, to the design of two projects, a county project and the Village of Alloway Level Street project. Currently working on putting together the application, the scope, and the cost for this project. It consists of rehabilitation of libel from 172 North of Culp Street. It does include sidewalk, where we have gaps. It also includes bike, on-street bicycle accommodations. The design cost of this project is roughly $360,000. I'm currently working through that right now. Construction cost is estimated at $2.6 million. So, I hope that in the next couple of days I can put together a solid scope and estimate and submit the application to the DOT for review, a draft copy of that for the review. When I have it complete, I'll bring it back for everyone's review.
What's the timeline for development
or construction? The design of the project won't start until 2021. Construction is anticipated 2024.
Okay. And what do you need from us this evening?
Just an update.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Item 17D, 2019 reconstruction update.
Give you a quick update on the street reconstruction projects. Longview Avenue, work has not started on Longview Avenue yet. It will next week, even the end of this week. Let's see. Martha Avenue, underground infrastructure has been installed. Contractors, we're holding off constructing the roadway until after Bill Johnson's development has started, and I guess I've heard recently that he has sold two out of three of the lots. I guess I haven't. I don't know when those other owners are going to start to build, but we have set in the contract that the street be constructed by, I believe, early September, end of August. So they have some time to get started. St. Joseph Street, the underground infrastructure, for the most part, is installed. West end of the project, contractors currently building the roadway. Oakwood Avenue from Green to Holloway Avenue. Work has started this week. Temporary traffic control has been installed. Construction of road control, the best management practices have been installed. And the contractor has just recently milled that roadway with the underground utility work starting next week or possibly at the end of this week. Oak Hill Drive and Summit, that work is anticipated to get started end of July, early August.
So things are going well?
They are. We did get a heavy rain this afternoon, and we had some washouts, but the contractors were able to get out and clean that up right away. So.
Okay. Thank you very much. Item 18, action regarding petition from St. Paul Home requesting the rezoning of parcel AL 1129 located at 212 Iroquois Avenue from A residential district to B residential district. It's for the McCormick Assisted Living. Schedule a hearing, and this is an action to schedule a public hearing, correct?
Correct.
Do you want to fill us in on anything? Anyone? If not, that's fine. Okay.
Unless there's any specific questions.
Okay. There's construction going on at McCormick Home. So do I have a motion to schedule a public hearing? Trustee Genrich.
So
Whiplash. Seconded by Trustee Atwood. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 19, action regarding resolution 2019-20 in support of the Wisconsin budget amendment to provide $5 million towards replacing the Green Bay Correctional Institution. As many of you know, there has been an effort underway for quite a few years to close Green Bay Correctional Institution and to move that elsewhere and to provide that property, make that available for redevelopment. Guesstimates are that we could develop a property worth about $100 million that would generate about $750,000 a year to Alloway alone, about $2 million in total tax revenue. There are a lot of different reasons for closing the prison. Our state representative, David Steffen, has worked extremely hard on this for the last 3 years, partnered with Senator Coles in support of this, and the Joint Finance Committee has, in this upcoming budget, has included $5 million to locate a new property for a new prison, purchase that property, put in utilities to that property, and put out a request for proposal for the development of a new property or a new prison. That is what they would spend over the next 2 years. And then at that point in time, they would put out, in the next budget, they would propose, hopefully, closing GBCI and building the new prison and have this closed by 2024 is the goal. So we have been well represented, and once the legislature votes on the budget, and I think on the 25th and 26th, it will then go to the governor, and if this piece of the budget is in that, we're asking people to support it and to let the governor know. So this resolution is to show our support from the local municipality, letting them know we understand the reasons why it should be moved, and to share our support. Do I have a motion on this item?
Move to approve.
Trustee Sampson. Do I have a second? Trustee Harris. Any discussion? We have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Excuse me. Item 20, auditor's report.
Just an update that our 2018 financial audit has been completed. It's done end of March or so. Just been some delay in getting the auditors in here to present it, so that's going to occur on July 16th.
Okay. You sat there this whole time just for that. Thank you. Thank you for that update, Julie. Item number 21. Do my fellow board members have anything for a future agenda? Hearing none, we will move on to item number 22, and I'll accept the motion to adjourn. So, Trustee Harris, seconded by Trustee Atwood. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. I thank you all for being here this evening.